everything she does.
Back off!
Is because she never loses sight of what's important. Putting you on a military transport tonight.
Hell yes.
No one's backing down on either side. We have a bona fide crisis.
We'll follow it up together. Get to the truth.
I did what had to be done.
Welcome back, all the smoke, my brother Jack. We got a special guest here, our brother. Although he don't look like us, he a lot uglier than both of us.
Mi hermano.
Al Harrington, man, we appreciate you.
What's up, Matt Shue?
Love one. What so, it do?
Here, here in the Viola establishment. Thank you for having us.
Hey, thanks for coming by,
headquarters.
We're going to jump right into it, man. Highly touted high school player. And you decided to take the jump straight to the league. How come you didn't want to go to college first?
Bro, I don't know. During that time, bro, I didn't know what the hell I was doing, man, to be honest. You know, I didn't start playing basketball until I was a freshman in high school. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, growing up, I didn't really have hoop dreams. It wasn't like, you know, I wanted to play in the NFL. You know, my goal was to play for Notre Dame and play for the New York Giants. But when I got to high school, I was 6'4".
Sorry.
And when I got to this new school, everybody just thought I hooped. So they put me on the team as a freshman. So on the freshman team, my nickname was Big Daddy. And Big Daddy
I heard a couple people still call you that.
That's not true.
He said, that's not true.
That's not true. But yeah, they called me Big Daddy, and Big Daddy was not good. You know what I'm saying? I barely played. That summer, I met this dude named Jay Syriac, and he was trying to get the best player on my team during that time, dude named Kurt Hobson. And he was like, yo, you think you can hook me up with Kurt? And if you bring Kurt, we'll let you play on the team or whatever.
So you was the plus one?
Yeah, I was the plus one, bro.
So
tried to get Kurt. I didn't get Kurt, but at the end of the day, dude took a liking to me, started, you know, helping me work out. He introduced me to the coach of the Roadrunners, with dude named Sandy Pione. And Sandy started working with me. And
shout out Sandy. Shout out Sandy.
And that's
shout
how I met Stack. And we'll get to that at some point. But Stack, I mean, excuse me, Sandy, like, told me everything, bro. He told me how to, you know, chew gum and dribble a basketball, chew gum and pick the ball up and lay it up. It was like a really, like, step-by-step process. And I ended up transferring schools to St. Patrick, which is a national powerhouse high school. Sophomore year, I started. Wasn't that good. I played with an All-American named Shaheen Holloway.
And Shaheen.
He stole your MVP at the McDonald's.
Yeah, he stole it.
But playing with Sha was a lot of pressure, man, because, you know, obviously he's all American. He wants to win a state championship. I'm in starting power four, and I can't catch. So just imagine playing
like
with a point guard that dropped down.
He can pass his ass off.
And I can't catch, bro. So he used to cuss me out every game, bro. So it got to the point, bro, where in the games, if it was a play and I was going to be open, I'd run behind my man so he couldn't pass me the ball. So I ain't have to hear
that's crazy.
His mouth. So that's me as a sophomore.
But you said you wanted to play football.
I wanted to play football, I mean, but I was on the line.
You need hands? Oh, okay.
No, I was off. Okay. I was an offensive tackle.
He was Big Daddy, too.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah, and I was a defensive end.
Okay. Al McFarland.
Yeah, you know already. So I just run into people and just, you know. Just run into people.
Right.
You know, I was a
so
big boy.
So you were high behind a dude so he couldn't pass you the ball?
No, I'm telling you, man, as my man rotated, I rotated with him. Just so I didn't have to worry about his throwing me the ball and him cussing me out. So that was my sophomore year. But, you know, that summer, you know, obviously I took, you know, my game started to expand. I got invited to the Adidas ABCD camp. And, you know, I got there as a, you know, a rising junior. Nobody knew me. And I balled out. I made the All-Star game. And then that's when, you know, I got on the map for the most part. And then that next year, I played against Lamar Odom down in South Jersey, and that's when I got my name. So, you know, obviously, L.O. was the dude, and I got the best of him that night.
You busted his ass?
I busted his ass.
What'd you do?
The numbers was something like, you know, 28, ooh, 15, ooh, or something, or whatever.
Ooh, big game, too.
L.O., we gonna talk about this when you come on the show, L.O.
Yeah, we won that game, bro. But I'm saying, I tell people all the time, like, I got my name, I got my Al Harrington name off of that game versus Lamar Odom. So big shout out to Lamar Odom for holding me down and giving me that opportunity.
Good looking.
But after that, you know, things just started to take off. I started working my way up the board, and, you know, by the time I was a senior, I went to Nike All-American camp. That's where all the top players was at, even though my AAU team was Adidas. Went there just hunting boys down, you know what I'm saying? And I ended up being the MVP of the camp. And, you know, that point, I was the number one player. And just because, you know, I seen all these other, all the number one players in the country was going pro out of high school, I was like, I might as well do the same thing. You know what I'm saying? And my mom was totally against it. She was just like, you too young, you too immature. What you gonna do up there with grown men?
Shout out, mama.
Yeah, so it literally took me like a month to convince her, because at that time, you know, your parents had to sign off on paperwork for you to go into the draft.
So you had to beg your mom to go to the NBA?
I had to beg my mother so she don't have to work no more.
That's crazy.
You know what I'm saying? But she finally signed the paperwork, and, you know, the rest is history. But if I went to school, I probably was gonna go to Georgia Tech. Okay. I wanted to go down to Atlanta. That's where my grandmother was. You know, I had a lot of family down there, so I wanted to go play in front of family if I did go to college.
So now you're drafted to the Indiana Pacers, where a winning franchise, Reggie Miller's there. There's a lot of talent there. Tell me what that's like, and how do you find your footing as a 18-year-old?
18-year-old. So, you know, it was hard going in there with all those vets, right? Because, I mean, I was playing with real vets.
The Davis brothers.
I played with the Davis boys. I played with Chris Mullin, Sam Perkins, Derek McKee. Mm-hmm.
Oh, geez.
Haywood Workman. Yeah. Like, those were my vets, you know what I'm saying? So these dudes was, like, grown kids, families, the whole thing. So a lot of them didn't really have time to hang out with me. But during that time coming up in the league, like, you know, rookies used to, they used to be hard on rookies, you know what I'm saying? So I used to have to, you know, obviously have donuts every day, fresh hot donuts from Krispy Kreme.
Did you eat any of them before you gave?
Yo, I ain't gonna lie, bro. So I got out of control in the beginning. Like, I gained like 10 pounds, bro. And I know Donnie Walsh came in and was like, what's going on? I was like, I don't know.
Dunkin' Donut run.
He's like, are you eating them donuts?
The donut run.
I'm like, yes, I'm smashing the donuts. I get them, they nice and hot.
They nice and hot. It's like they're calling it now.
Hot and tasty. So I was smashing the donuts, but no, donuts, orange juice, having to get their cars clean, unloading the plane, unloading the bus,
picking up the practice gear.
I was the only rookie my rookie year. So, like, they used to run me thin, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, during that time, that's when I realized that successful players in the league actually smoke weed because I was the rookie.
Really?
Because, you know, I used to get sent to go buy blunts and all that type of stuff, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, I was blessed to have those guys, you know what I'm saying? I really feel like because those guys was around, it allowed me to play 16 years, you know what I'm saying? Because they helped me, you know, set a foundation of what it took to be a pro first and how to survive in the league 16 years. All that was, you know, being professional, not being late, you know what I'm saying? Working your ass off. And if you do those things, and with the talent that I had, you know what I'm saying? I was set up to have longevity in the league. So, you know, as much as I wish I came to a team where, you know, in my rookie year, I got major minutes and all that. My thing was a blessing in disguise that I was able to sit down for a year and kind of just watch and, you know, figure it out for myself of, like, you know, what it took to actually be in the league and, you know, be able to, you know, like I said, be able to have that longevity.
What did it take to crack once you started playing? Like, when someone got hurt, it was just that summer you killed? What was it that got you playing the next year?
Well, what happened was Mully left, right, and Dale Davis left. So that was the 3 and the 4, right? Antonio left. So Antonio was the backup 4, and Mully was the backup 3 behind Jalen. And so that gave me an opportunity. That summer, you know, I worked my ass off. I got in unbelievable shape. You know, I lived in the gym. I was just waiting for my opportunity. And during that summer is when I lived in New York. So I was playing against guys like Anthony Mason, God bless the dead, you know, Malik Sealy. You know, I was able to play against guys that play all the time in the league and kind of, you know, learn from them as well, some of the nuances of the game. So when I came back in, you know, my second year, you know, I was ready to play. You know what I'm saying? And for the most part, I played, you know, most of that year until I actually hurt my back.
You skipped over the set. How did you and Al, you and Jack meet?
Oh, yeah, so the guy Sandy Pagnone that I'm talking about that taught me the game or whatever, he has this gym in Union, New Jersey. And to this day, I still don't know how Jack ended up being in there, but Jack walked in with jeans on, you know, to work out or whatever, came in, you know, took all his stuff off, you know, put his workout shit on. And what was amazing, I turned, I looked, and his jeans was still standing there. Like, literally, the jeans was still...
He was starched up.
Bro.
Hey, Stay Flow, baby. We had that Stay Flow work.
Bro, he had so much starch in his jeans, dog. He took them off.
You just stood him up?
He just stood him up.
You that kind of dude, too, just to do some dumb shit like that. Just stand it.
So I was amazed by that. I'm like, yo, bro, how your pants still standing there? He's like, some Slow Flow or whatever he said. I was like, oh, I ain't never heard of that before.
Keep that shit where you from.
So, you know what I'm saying? We worked out. or whatever. And, you know, obviously, you know, he was 2 years older than me, you know what I'm saying? So obviously he had game, you know what I'm saying? And that was the only day he came, you know what I'm saying? So
came, I still did your thing and kept it moving, huh?
It was just a workout.
You know how we do it.
Yeah. I didn't want me to work out with Sandy.
Came, got him a workout in, and never seen him again until I got to the league. You know what I'm saying? But that's when I first met my brother, you know what I'm saying? And obviously we hit it off. And then, you know, obviously when he got into the league, he played in New Jersey, and, you know, Steph was like my big homie, my mm-hmm. big brother, and same thing to him. So that's how we started to reconnect, and, you know, obviously the rest is history.
So you guys are traded for each other somewhat in 04, and then you eventually end up back on the Pacers together. You guys want to talk mm-hmm. about that? What was that like?
Well, the playing together was short, real short in Indiana.
Yeah, he got us ran out of town, actually.
What happened? We can talk about it.
All I'm saying
is
hold
up. Really? It's your fault.
How's it my fault?
I was at home, chilling. Jack, let's go. The rest of the team is out. Let's go. I'm like, nah, we've been out all day. Jack, come on, man. So you're the reason why I left the house.
That may be true. But what happened was...
What transpired after he left the house?
Man, so whatever it was, man, like, so we get traded for each other. I should have never left. This guy is unbelievable. I leave. He goes and have a brawl in Detroit. You know what I'm saying? He starts with that. So I'm like,
so you could have been in that.
I would have been in that.
There's no
question. You serious about that? Thank God, because I needed all my chicken.
Right.
Big shout out to Beast Mode.
Right.
I need all my chicken, so thank God I wasn't there. But okay, so from a distance, I look, I see that, boom, you know, Stack going to stands, he fighting everybody in the arena or whatever. I'm like, oh yeah, this guy's wild.
This guy's wild.
Next year, they have some success or whatever. So obviously now there's an opportunity for me to actually go back to the team. So I'm like, you know, one of those, I felt like, you know, I should have never left Indiana in the first place, to be honest, because Atlanta was a hellhole. You know what I'm saying? I went from winning 61 games in the 2003-04 season to 2004-05 season winning 13 games.
Ooh.
So, like...
Your numbers was crazy, though.
My numbers was crazy, but they don't respect numbers when you win 13. They like, somebody got to score.
No bullshit.
They don't give you no props when you get big numbers on the 13-win team. It was so bad in Atlanta, bro. I remember one time we went on a losing streak for so long that by the time we won, SportsCenter ran a special of like all the things that happened since the last time we won a game. And it was like the Grammys, the Super Bowl, March Madness.
Martin Luther King.
It was like all kind of stuff.
The playoffs.
So I go, they didn't even tell me how bad it was. But we just passed, tell me how bad it was going to be in Atlanta. But whatever. So to his point, you know, I get back to the team and, you know, obviously, you know, they had a lot of success. And I'm thinking, obviously, adding me and all this type of stuff. Now, I'm understanding.
It was you for wrong.
Yeah, and I'm understanding now, like, you know, I'm going to come off the bench and I'm okay with it now. You know what I'm saying? I got through that process.
What year is this? What, year six for you, seven?
It was year six when I left.
Okay.
When I wanted to start.
When you came back, you were starting. Because remember, Ron had just left. So you were starting.
Ron was a sack?
Yeah, you were starting.
That's right, I was starting.
You were starting. Ron had just left. And that's why they brought you back, because they had to get Ron up out of there.
That's right. So, you know, we're playing well. You know what I'm saying? Not well. We're playing okay.
Okay.
Or whatever. But we get through training camp, so, you know, the night, you know, that changed everything for me. So when I get back, you know, I'm thinking, like, I'm set. Like, I'm never leaving Indiana again. They love me, whatever. So I go and buy a house. A house that I want to gut and do all this stuff to it. So I gut it. I put all kind of wild stuff, suede walls, two TVs in every room.
Went crazy.
Just went crazy, right? Because I'm thinking I'm back in Indiana to stay.
Life.
Or whatever. So training camp, we get a day off.
Bad start. Days off are no good.
Get a day off, right? We have no practice the next day. So everybody like, yo, let's go out and hang out. So I should have known the night was going to be crazy because I come out of this restaurant called Champs, and Jamal Tinsley's driving by, so I wave him down. So I'm like, more. So he pull over. So I'm like, what you about to do? So as I stick my head in the car, in the back seat of his car, he has like 25 guns. Right, so.
Well, just laying there.
Pause. So we had all just got our gun license. The sheriff had came to my house and gave us all gun licenses like 2 weeks before that. Go ahead, I finished.
So I should have known this was going to be a wild night. Because I look in the car, and he's in a 645 BMW. So there's no real backseat, but it's filled with guns. So I'm like, where are you coming from, bro?
What the fuck?
So he like, we all coming from the gun range. We all got our licenses, blah, 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 blah.
Shout
I'm
out,
like,
mom.
All right. I'm like, yo, let's do something tonight. They like, all right, let's go. I think it's called Pure Passion, or what was the name of the spot?
Rio.
Yeah.
Club Rio.
Let's go to Rio. So I'm like, all right, cool, let's go to Rio. Get on the phone calls. It's the first person I'm going to call. Stack, what you doing? Said, I'm at the house. I'm chilling. Hey, let's go to Rio tonight. We ain't got practice tomorrow. Let's go shake it up a little bit. All right. So we all meet at Rio. So I think the night
whole
is fun.
Team?
Whole team. Whole team. We all in there, you know, throwing some dollars around, having a great time. You know, get around that time for me. I'm like, all right, I'm gone. So shake his hand. They just act like, I'm right behind you. What else? I'm like, all right, cool. So I leave. I go downtown. I'm staying at the hotel downtown. I get up the next morning, and it's when I had this bullshit-ass mohawk.
That shit was terrible.
What was I thinking?
Kicked up.
And that's why I'm just saying, like, for them to be my homeboys, nobody pulled me aside and was like, son, that mohawk is some bullshit.
That shit was super weak.
Like, not one of them.
And your shit was balding right here, too.
It was thin here.
It was some Mr. T shit.
And that's why I struggled with it, because I had to get it cut all the time, because it was some bullshit. But nobody, not one of my homeboys said, yo, fam, cut that off.
You know, I would have definitely told you.
Yeah, because you would have been saying jokes, and that would have definitely made me cut my shit off.
I was letting him rock, fam. Let him live.
So check it out. So I get up in the morning, whatever. Sunny day. It's a nice day. Beautiful day. Off day. So I'm going to the barbershop to go get my mohawk touched up. So I get in there, and when I sit down, the dude like, yo, everybody all right from last night? And I'm like, what you mean? He's like, nah, the Pacers, y'all had a shootout last night. I said, a shootout? What you talking about, bro? He like, yeah, man, y'all team had a shootout with some dudes at the club. I'm like, what club? He like, Rio. So I'm literally the last person in the state of Indiana to know that these boys had a shootout.
He was just with him.
So I call Stack. Well, he don't answer, obviously. I call J.O. J.O. like, we at the hospital. So I'm like, he's like, we about to leave, though. So I'm like, all right, cool. So he like, everybody gonna meet at Stack House in like a couple hours. So I go to Stack House, and, you know, it's like all somber, you know, whatever.
Quiet, but
I come with Danny Granger. So we walk in, and Stack come turn the corner, and his face is like this big, his
swole,
lips.
My lips.
Everything.
Teeth gone,
it's crazy.
All kind of shit.
And Danny Granger looked at him and said, damn, Jack!
Hey, it made me laugh. I couldn't really laugh because my lips were so swollen.
And he tried to laugh and his lips couldn't move, bro. Oh my God.
So to go back, when Al pulled out the parking lot, I was right behind him. But as Al was turning the corner at the light, I seen Jamal running out the club. And they was chasing Jamal to his car. So I put my shit in reverse. And as I we just got a gun license, so I pulled my shit out. And I ran over there with Jamal. I had my shit in my hand. By the time I get over there, you know, like, we about to fight. So I hit one of them with my pistol. Bow! We get to fighting. More dudes come up out of the club. I've been in that position too many times. I know before I get surrounded and stumped out, I'm going to let off some warning shots. Bow, bow! I let two off. By that time, I was running to my car. Somebody, one of the niggas that got in their car, and sized me up in the parking lot and hit me going like 35, 40 miles per hour. Boom! Knocked me in the air. I hit the ground, the momentum of the car hit me, my face is hitting the ground, I stand up, all my teeth gone, my lips shattered, but what made me come back was one of my teammates, I ain't gotta say his name on here, he started letting off at the car. And that made me come out of it. So as I stood up and saw that, I pulled my shit out and chased the car down. As I shot my last shot, I passed out, wake up in the back of the car with Marquise and the police, Marquise Dan's in the police car, because just for the simple fact that they had all of us arrested. But they had me in the car, and I was unconscious. So I hear him kicking the door. He think I'm dying because my lips, my teeth gone, my lips just bleeding everywhere. He think I'm dying. So he kicking the door, and that's how I wake up. 10 minutes later, they let us go. We meet at the gas station, and I think that's when you talk to J.O. for the first time, because we all met at the gas station. We all had guns. We all was finna go tear some shit up. I was ready to kill everything moving. And mid-sentence, Jermaine O'Neal stopped me and say, Jack, I feel all that shit. I feel all that shit you talk about. I want to kill somebody, too. But you got to go to the hospital, dog. You got to go to the hospital. And I'm not even thinking that, but what the fucked up part was, as soon as he said it, my shit instantly started hurting. I'm like, oh. Gums started hurting, everything, man. I had to go.
All your teeth out?
And my top one's out. I had to get plastic surgery on my lips for 2 hours with no anesthesia. So they cutting my lips, taking rocks and shit out of my debris out of my lips and shit for 2 hours. I'm holding Rick Carlisle's hand, and I forgot who else was there, my girl hand at the time. And just, I fought it for 2 hours. After that shit, I slept for like 7 hours straight. Mm.
So that's how when I came back to Indiana and why I got out of there.
That's why we got traded.
That's why we got traded so fast.
So now, from there, is where we all get connected.
Yes, and Golden State.
So you guys get traded late January to Golden State.
Yeah, it was late January, yep.
I was on my way out the league. I had bounced around the league 3-4 years, never really got a chance to play. Barron had called me up that pre-summer. Yo, we hooping down in the city. I drove an hour and a half from Sac, played well. Nelly was watching, long story. I get on the team. So we're having not a very good year, but I'm starting to play consistently and play good enough to where they're ready to get rid of Mike Dunleavy and Troy Murphy because I'm playing well. And we hear buzz, who's coming this, who's coming that.
Mike Dunleavy, he's one of the funniest dudes ever, one of the best teammates
cool
ever.
Shit. Troy
Mike
cool
Dunleavy.
Too.
Shout out Mike Dunleavy.
Troy's cool as shit too.
Where you play with him at?
Mike Dunleavy, Milwaukee.
Oh.
So then, remember the day the trade went down, they told us who was coming, and we're like, wow, how the fuck we get them? But we only had like 7 dudes that day, maybe. I want to say we played the Lakers, the Clippers, we were in LA, got beat, but then y'all came and just became an instant brotherhood. Like, you guys had the connection already. I didn't know really, I just knew you guys from playing. Me and BD had a connection. You had a connection to BD, but it was just like instant. So tell me what it was like from Indiana to where you think a dream situation is, and then Jack gets you traded. what was that like?
That's fucked up, man. How you had to say it like
I mean,
that,
dog? It sucked because I had, like I said, you know, I didn't finish my point with the house. Like, I spent all this money in this
Killed
house.
That shit.
And, bro, I literally slept in it 3 nights.
Man, fuck your house.
3 nights, bro.
That's how fast it happened?
It happened that fast. I gutted it, bro.
So fuck
I lived
his house,
in a,
nah.
I lived in a hotel for 3 months, bro. But whatever. But, you know, obviously coming there, bro, so the one thing I can say about Indiana, and I think what we brought to that team was the brotherhood kind of vibe, you know what I'm saying? Because that was the same way we hung out in Indiana, you know what I'm saying? I feel like the reason why we wasn't having the success we were supposed to have on the court was because we was enjoying the nightlife a little too much, you know what I'm saying? I can recall two trips, one in Toronto and one in L.A., where, like, we get to the arena for shoot-around, and, like, we bring it in, and, like, it smelled like nothing but, like, Grey Goose and Patron. Like, it's coming out of everybody's pores to the point where, like, Rick, like, yo, look, let's just go back. Y'all get some rest and come back ready to play tonight. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I think we was kind of letting the nightlife kind of get the best of us just because, you know, we felt like we were so good, we could kind of turn it on. We wanted to and different things like that. But I think when we got traded, it kind of woke both of us up. And I think that coming to the Golden State situation, we knew that it was going to be more of a challenge. The team had been to the playoffs in 13 years and different things like that. So it gave us a focus. It gave us something to strive for, you know what I'm saying? And then getting in the locker room and realizing how many real dudes was in the locker room, we was like, oh, shit, yo.
It's an AAU team.
We fell on our feet. Nice. Not knowing you at all, and then realizing you were the craziest motherfuckers I could ever meet. You know what I'm saying? Wow. Inappropriate. You just a wild motherfucker.
Like a motherfucker.
Right? Well, that's just Matt. Then BD, who is, I call him the Walt Disney of hoop, because he is just 1,000 people in the same day.
In the same day.
Shout out BD.
3 or 4 motherfuckers in one conversation.
Monte was a young killer, but didn't know what was going on. He was just waiting on us to just teach him or tell him to do anything,
looking.
Just sick him on anything. Jay Rich, another dude, Don like,
Julio.
You know, another
Shout
one,
out
a dog,
Julio.
Ready to go. And he was coming back from injury, so he had a lot to prove. I think we just came into a perfect situation, and then we bought that family vibe, family dinners, and, you know, we connected our wives and our girls and different things like that. And, you know, in 2 months' time, bro, I felt like I had been with y'all for years.
A long time.
Obviously, what really brought us together was, you know, down the stretch when I think we had to win, like, 14 out
had
of 17
to,
games.
To make sure even think about making playoffs.
Like
it was
that.
18 out of 21.
We had to win 18 out of 20. Like, that's crazy. And we all looked at each other, and I think
Let's
it was because
it.
Of those 5-6 weeks beforehand of building that we could look at each other and know, like, yo, we can actually do this shit.
But you know on and saying? Off the court, too, is what people don't understand. Is like, it's crazy that you say you guys are kind of burning on both ends of Indiana. You thought you could turn. We burned it in Golden State, too. But
right.
We had, like you said, we had more. We didn't have as much cushion. So we had to, okay, we're going to go out and get fucked up. We still got to come out and hoop tomorrow. We did that every single night.
And I think what was unique about our team, too, which I think, I think it affects the game now, is like, we had a type of team we could hold each other accountable.
You can say anything to anybody.
You can say anything to anybody, whether it hurt your feelings or not, you got over it. You got to be close, you know, to, like, stories where, like, one of us is not playing and you come out the game and we could joke on you and not be personal.
Right,
you know
what
I'm saying? Because if you don't have that level of communication, you know what I'm saying?
It's
that
a fight.
That could be misconstrued all type
all
of
that,
ways.
Right.
For me, like, you know, that was a blessing, you know what I'm saying, being able to play with y'all. And, you know, that feeling that we had during that time, I'm not even gonna lie, like, after I moved on from there, I never could recreate that. You know what I'm saying? Nowhere
I don't think none of us.
You know what I'm saying?
None of us did.
What we had was special, bro. Yeah. Like, we did everything together, dog.
On and off the court, we went
on
so hard.
On and off the court, we did everything.
But people don't realize, like you said that it was a three-month span where we went from bottom of the West to the eighth seed, and the last night, remember the Clippers lost to someone in L.A.
We was in Portland.
We had beat Portland and we needed the Clippers to lose, and the Clippers lost to a team they shouldn't have lost to,
yep.
And we knew as we were winning that they had lost, and we lost our minds.
Well, the reason why I remember that, because remember that game in Portland, I got kicked out, and Don Nelson came up to me. He's like, I don't care about you getting kicked out. Just don't get suspended. We're going to make the playoffs. and he was walking me off the court. I remember the video.
Yep.
I don't care about you getting kicked out.
Right.
Just don't get suspended for the next game. We're going to make the playoffs.
But you guys brought such an amazing energy to our team. You know what I mean? Both as skilled as can be from the wing position, from the all over the floor, but down someone that could do a lot of stuff in a bigger player, because people don't realize, like, that's Nelly Ball.
He guarded Yao.
You know what I mean? You're guarding Yao Ming. You know what I mean? I'm playing the five sometimes.
He hated that shit, though.
Yeah. Y'all remember that? Do y'all remember every time we played y'all? Y'all remember the next day I couldn't practice or nothing? I couldn't move?
That was a big motherfucking league.
Yo, he used to knee because...
He hated that shit.
I had to front him, and fronting someone that's 7'4" means the nigga's going to be kneeing you all in your back. So I never... Like, every time we played them the next day, I could not move.
Hey, dude, you remember before the game? He was like, yeah, fine. I ain't starting today.
What you mean?
Fuck that. I ain't starting.
Took yourself out the lineup?
I ain't starting today. Fuck that. He hated going, yeah. Put Goose ass and I ain't starting today.
Yeah, man. I'm like, I thought Nelly used to do that shit on purpose, too. I'm like, why can't Goose front him? Why I got to front him?
We laughed at you until we had to go at Boozit in a cool.
And Millsap.
Ooh, and Millsap.
Young Millsap.
Oh, my goodness.
The young Boo Millsap.
We felt your pain then.
The shit was crazy. And then, like I said, that was a two-month span, and then we talk about the trade that happened with Jay Rich, and then the beginning of the next season, my mom died, so I'm kind of out the mix. You kind of fall out with Nelly, and that was it. The team was gone. They didn't re-sign Barron
The
following year. That's, you know what I mean?
So Jay Rich was gone first.
We traded Jay Rich first.
Yeah.
Jay Rich was gone first.
Yeah.
Then BD.
Yeah.
BD was the next season, because remember, the next season we won 48 games.
We almost
didn't
make the playoffs.
Yeah, Denver, and that night Denver won. They beat the Clippers, and they got in, and we lost. Yeah. And that was the first time I smoked weed.
Yeah. I told you it was after we lost. It was after we lost to Utah, right?
It was the second year
after we figured we weren't in the playoffs no more.
That's the first time I smoked. Was in Phoenix.
No, because remember you smoked, then you had the drug test the next day and you passed it?
It was in Phoenix. I didn't pass it. I diluted.
You diluted it?
Because what happened was, y'all told me, because the trainer called me on the way to the gym.
Crazy.
And was like, yo, you got a piss test. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
First time he ever smoked.
First time I ever smoked. I get piss tested the next day. We was in Phoenix.
Yeah, everyone came to my room. Everyone.
I got off the bus.
Everybody was blown.
When he told me, I got off the bus, and I went to Whole Foods, and I got that Sony number 7 thing y'all told me to get. I got that. I drank it. That shit was disgusting.
Word.
And I just start pissing all day.
Yeah.
So I got to the game and I'm nervous. So I don't piss when I get there. I tell them I can't piss. So I wait till after the game.
Yeah.
So you remember, y'all was waiting on me and everything. And when I pissed, it was just all water. So that's when I realized you get a dilute test.
You get one.
You get one.
One.
So that was my one. That's how I passed. Yeah. I had, right? Because it was all water. He put the thing in. He was like, this is all water. And I was like, what you want me to do?
I'm a fucking athlete. What you mean?
Bro, I'm hydrated.
We gave you the blueprint.
y'all got me through that. But yeah, that was the first. But I remember that night, man. I was paranoid in that room, man.
That liquid shit. It was liquid. Yeah, some shit called liquid.
Man, y'all had me. I was high.
Well, because you smoked, but you had never smoked.
Never smoked.
But
that
was the
first
time. You wasn't really passing it up, though. I'm gonna keep it real. Like, you burn with us.
Yeah, I smoked.
So we're
with
used
y'all.
To it.
But when I got to my room, it got weird. everything
weird.
I love, it got weird as shit when I got in that room, bro.
Hey, we always talk about that game 6 after we won, right. How that night was.
Right.
Like, all the stuff we done. You remember? What you remember from that night?
Man, so, you know, I didn't... So, if you remember, you know, I had my wife with me.
Yeah.
So I didn't get a chance to go with you boys, you know what I'm saying, that night. But I remember going to the city, that Italian restaurant we go to all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, literally we walked in and everybody, like, stood up cheering. You know what I'm saying? We was rock star. I really believe that one of us could have got away with murder that year.
We were that hot?
I swear.
When I tell you,
because think about it, I've been in winning teams. I've been in winning markets, right?
You've been a winner.
I've never seen it, people, the way they carried us in Golden State.
It had us down in the city.
I think...
They would have dumped the body, I believe.
If you knocked somebody off and it was some dudes walking down the street, they'd have helped you get rid of it.
We went to Fillmore 5.
I believe that.
They loved us, bro. We had, like, you talking about
that's
the culture,
say,
like,
yeah.
You know, like, the real authentic culture of Oakland and all that, though, we had
they
that.
They fucked with us. That's why I tell people, when I went back to 17 and got a chance to win the ring, they talked about that We Believe team more than the current success they had, and it blew my mind. I'm like, you got Steph, KD, you got these... We Believe, is that's our heart, that's Oakland, that's this, that's that. And then to see the other players like Steph and KD and them do show love to our team, too, wearing the jerseys and the warm-ups and all that shit, I'm just like... Like, I still got my crib out there, so I go and show my face all in the supermarkets. They open lines for me, discount the shit out of my growth. Like, it's crazy out there, bro.
Yo, that night, man. And I remember, obviously, talking to y'all, like, the next day and hearing some of the stories about smoking with coaches and all that other stuff.
So you didn't go with us to Snoop Hotel?
Was it Baron?
It had to be Baron.
It was BD, it probably wasn't me.
It had to be Baron.
Is that when you talk about what he said when BD was like, Pac, ride for us?
Nah, that was another shit. We was talking about that shit at dinner last night.
We talked about it at dinner last night. You heard the story?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but that's
so it must have been Baron. We got to ask BD.
Nah, that wasn't me. I was with
you was
with
wife. You did the right thing.
Yeah, I went
that's
straight
why,
home.
I mean, yeah. You did what you're supposed to do. Because it wasn't no more trouble that night.
Lots of trouble.
Yeah, you did what you're supposed to do.
No, I know y'all had a blast.
A blast. So now... You've been out of the NBA for six years. Crazy, right?
It flies, yo. You know what I'm saying? Next thing you know, I'm be saying I'm out 16. Mm-hmm.
So what was it like? You know, you didn't go to college, so you went from high school to the NBA, made good money. Now you're retired at, how old were you?
34. So I had knee surgery, right? In I think 2012 or whatever, and got staph infection from the surgery. So, you know, during that time, I thought I was going to die. The whole shit, I was fucked up. 2 weeks, I lost like 40 pounds. Like, I was skinny like you, bro.
You was looking like 50 Cent on that one movie?
Yeah. So I know how to get skinny. I just got to get sick or something. I'm
crazy. What?
Because you know I'm all with all the diets and all the other shit.
You motherfucker eat grass and leaves now. This nigga used to eat anything. That's why I asked him early in the interview with them donuts. Keto. I know Al used to fuck them. Al could eat.
Snack man,
I love snacks.
Remember, he always used to be in the locker room with like three of them waist wraps on, always doing crunches the whole time.
Remember, that shit didn't work.
We played together, I always was on the weight thing.
Yeah, he always had to be on the bike and all this shit.
Because Nelly would weigh us at any second. He's like, "You look fat, Harrington. Get on the scale." I'm like, "Yo, you bitch ass motherfucker, whatever."
My God.
But yeah, that's why I was always working out or whatever.
Every time you see Al in the restaurant, he's doing crunches everywhere.
I always wanted to have a six-pack, but I got a six-pack after basketball, and I'll tell you how. But when I, I had the staph infection, messed me up. So the next season, I went to play in Orlando. Didn't play the whole year. I played six games or whatever, so I always void that year out of my mind, but I'll acknowledge it now. I got in shape that next summer, went to Washington, played for the Wizards, got hurt after like the sixth or seventh game or whatever, went down, came back the last 20 games of the season, made the playoffs for the first time out there, whatever, had some success. But, you know, my knee, since I was back and forth with my knee, and the team didn't know if I could hold up a whole season. So they wanted me to coach and then go on the active roster after All-Star break, right? And I figured that was a setup, right? I'm like, that don't even make no sense. They're gonna be like, you're gonna end up coaching the whole year. So I was like, you know what? I'm cool on that. Get a call from Stephon. Steph was like, what you doing? I was like, chilling. He was like, you in shape? I was like, yeah. He like, you in shape? And he know a time, like, Steph is a weirdo with all this stuff. He's like, you in shape?
Right.
I'm like, yeah, I'm in shape. He like, come play in China. So I'm like, China? He like, yeah, I can get you like $2 million. It's tax-free money, blah, blah, blah. Just come play in China. So I'm like, I don't know about that. So he called me a week later. He like, you got a team yet? I was like, nothing yet. He was like, just come play in China. He's like, stay in shape. He said, you'll be done by All-Star break. A team will pick you up because you in rhythm. Right. So I'm like, now that makes sense. I was like, all right, cool. So I go over there and I go to Fujian. And I knew when I was landing that I wasn't going to make it.
Like, damn.
Bro, I'm telling you, like, I came. So, okay, when they sent me over there, I had to go get my Chinese visa. So I had to stop in Hong Kong. So when you, if you know, when you get to Asia, like, if you don't, you know, do the melatonin thing and get on a pattern, like, you will just pass out in the middle of the day and be asleep until, like, 3 in the morning. You know what I'm saying? So I did that for 3 days. Like, I could not stay up. So I finally wake up. And, you know, it's my flight. So I get to Fujian, and as I'm coming out of the clouds and shit, I look, and it's just like, it's like crazy. It's like third world country, like, as I'm looking out the window. So at that time, I knew. Right when I got out the clouds, I was like, oh, I'm not going to make it out here or whatever. So went there, played there. They told me that, you know, my center was going to be the next Yao Ming or whatever. So I get there, and the kid, he's good, not great. You know what I'm saying? Our team sucks. You know, we getting our ass smacked in preseason. So after like the fourth preseason game, I went to the GM, and it was a lady, her name was Ricky, and she knew nothing about basketball, but she's the GM, she makes all the decisions. So I go to Ricky and I'm like, Ricky, look, you told me this team was good, it's terrible. I was like, I want you to find me a replacement. I want to get out of here. So she's like, okay, okay. She calls my agent, he calls me, he's like, yo, just tough it out, blah, 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 blah. So I play two games and then I call her back and I'm like, yo, get me out of here. I'm like, I'm giving you till Thanksgiving. So long story short, she finds somebody, DJ White or whatever, he comes and replaces me. So I come back home. So when I got back after that, you know, no teams was calling. So that's when I realized, like, it's over. You got to start figuring out what you're going to do next. You know what I'm saying? And at that time, I had already started working on something, you know what I'm saying, which was obviously the cannabis space. So, you know, I was able to transition into something else.
Walk us through this cannabis journey, because I tell people, like, you're at the forefront of it. And one thing, too, I definitely want to commend you. I think because we're friends and we're all tight, we really don't show how much we appreciate and respect you have, we have for you for what you're doing in this space, man. You're doing some amazing shit across the board, man. So I just want to congratulate you, man. It's good to see you. You know what I mean? I'm looking up to you in this space because I'm in the space as well. But just to see the moves you're making and how you're giving back and how you're really, you know, opening up other athletes' eyes and making them realize, okay, this is something we can invest in. We missed, you know, this is our prohibition. This is our gold rush, you know. This is cotton.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We can eat off this. So just wanted to start with that. We appreciate what you're doing in the space, man. So, but tell us a little bit what you are, what exactly is. Explain Viola to us.
Yeah, man. So, you know, obviously, you know, it all started, you know, back when I was playing with the Denver Nuggets. You know, I was there right when, you know, their medical program got started. And, you know, I'm a newspaper guy. I think probably because of my rookie year, they're making me get so many newspapers, I got accustomed to, like, just grabbing a newspaper all the time. So while I was there, you know, I was always reading the paper and, you know, obviously the sports section a lot of the times, but there was always stuff about cannabis in there, telling stories about, you know, kids that have epilepsies and seizures and how cannabis oils was affecting their life, or how people, you know, that had HIV or cancer, you know, how cannabis was giving them a better quality of life, you know, in their last days. Even just the benefits of cannabis towards glaucoma and other, you know, diseases or whatever. So when my grandmother, you know, I convinced her to come see me play out there, you know, she got there and, you know, we start talking and she started taking all this medication and I'm asking her what's wrong with her and she started telling me these things and, you know, one of them was glaucoma. So I was excited because literally like 2 days before that, I was reading something in the paper about the benefits of, you know, cannabis for glaucoma patients. So I started telling her about it and, you know, I'm calling it cannabis. And then finally, she, you know, she asked me, well, what is cannabis? And I was just like, you know, it's marijuana weed. And she was like, reefer? She's like, you telling me reefer's gonna help me? Like, no way reefer gonna help me. And she just shuts it down. So the next day I come home and, you know, she's sitting in the kitchen. And when I walk in, she's squinting her eyes and she's like, is that you, baby doll? And I'm like, what's up, grandma? And she's like, my eyes hurt so bad today, I can barely see. So I was like, you take all that medication and it doesn't work? I'm like, why don't we just try cannabis and, you know, we'll just keep it, you know, on the low between us, right? And obviously now I've told millions of people, right, which is cool. But, you know, she was just like, I'm in so much pain today, I'll try anything. So had my boy go to the dispensary. He brought back Vietnam Kush. We vaporized it for her in a volcano bag. Just you could tell neither one of us are experienced smokers, right?
In the bag.
She hit the bag 3-4 times. And why it was funny, because when she was smoking it, she was hitting it and blowing it out her nose. Perfect.
Oh, so she was hitting it, too.
Yeah, I'm like, damn, grandma.
She did that before.
Yeah, I'm like, grandma, you smoke?
She did that before.
She's like, nah, I smoked a cigarette one time when I was 16, whatever. So she hit it, take it downstairs. I take a nap. Wake up from my nap. I'm like, let me go check on her to make sure she ain't down there climbing the walls or going crazy. And I go downstairs, and the door's closed. So now I'm like, really not knowing what to expect, right? So I knock on the door. And when I poke my head through the door, her back to the door, she's looking down. And I'm just like, grandma, how you doing? And she turned around, and she's crying tears. And she's like, I'm healed. I haven't been able to see the words in my Bible in over 3 years. So she was downstairs reading her Bible. And, you know, if anybody know anything about Viola Harrington, bro, like, I mean, if she not going to heaven, we're all going to hell for sure. We don't have a chance. Like, when my grandfather died at a young age, she never remarried. She married the Lord. She was the treasury at the church. She ran all of the communion. Like, she the one. For her first experience with cannabis and for her to go read her Bible, to me, was like, God's talking to me. You know what I'm saying? So it just inspired me to start learning. You know what I'm saying? And now I'm starting to take these newspaper articles way more serious. Damn, this is something that obviously we've been lied to for a very long time, but this is something that can really, like, help people. Like I said, I went through the education process. That next year, I called, you know, my co-founder, you know, because he was the only person that I knew that had some, you know, experience in growing cannabis. And we came to Colorado. We looked around at all these different opportunities. I asked him, I said, you think you can do this? He was like, yes. And we found our first building, a 12,000 square foot facility in Denver, Colorado. We became caregivers in the beginning, so all of our patients either had HIV or cancer. So we used to go strains that was heavy indica. And that's how we started, bro. And, you know, we started there. And, you know, in 2014 is when, you know, we got issued our first license. So we had to name the business something. And, you know, obviously, you know, we sat there and we decided we wanted to name it after the person that inspired us to get to this point. And, you know, we named it Viola. So that's how Viola got started.
What are some of the stuff I know, what's important to you in this space? I mean, you're not doing it for the financial gain. You did well for yourself in sports and in other investments. But tell us why, what drives you in this space?
Man, I'm be honest. Like, when I first started, you know what I'm saying? It was about, you know, being able to have some extra cash in my pocket and help people, right? once I started realizing how the cannabis that we was growing, how it really was medicine, how it was really helping and affecting people, I was like, yo, we doing God's work, bro. We doing something with something that's very natural. You know what I'm saying? This is something that is grown. It can be grown anywhere. All you need is sunlight and water. That's not a drug compared to all this other stuff that they recommend that we use. We take too many of them, we die. You know, most times, whatever we're taking, the other side effects are worse than the thing that we're trying to cure. You know what I'm saying? So that's when I realized, I was like, yo, this is God's work, man. And, you know, it really just inspired me to, you know, leave basketball alone for the most part completely. You know, I played in the Big Three or whatever, and that was more just to be able to hang out with my guys, kick it on the weekends and stuff like that. But my day-to-day business has been cannabis. And as I've been going through this journey, I've realized, like, obviously I'm having a lot of wins and a lot of success, but when I go to these different events and different things like that, I'm the only one in the room that looks like me. And when I think about, you know, how cannabis was used to pretty much tear down, you know, the Black and Latino community, now that it's this billion-dollar industry and we have no representation, like, I have a huge issue with that. That's really bullshit. And once I started to realize that, I was like, wow, like, you know, obviously we're doing our part in regards of, you know, building a brand and, you know, helping people with the medicine, right? But what are we doing to uplift our people? What opportunities are we providing for them? And when I asked myself that at that time, I didn't have any answers. At that point is when I decided to, you know, pivot our company, and, you know, our company now is a lifestyle cannabis brand with purpose. And our purpose is about empowering and uplifting the Black community. All people, they always want to talk about jobs and this and that. Like, yeah, jobs are cool, you know what I'm saying? But, like, we want ownership, you know what I'm saying? Like I said, when you think about, you know, 85% of all drug arrests in the Black community are all cannabis related, you know what I'm saying? And we only represent 3% of diversity in cannabis. How does that even make sense? I feel like what I'm doing is putting myself to have a seat at the table and by me having a seat at the table, I can now come back and turn back and talk to my brothers about it and tell them the opportunities, the best ways to come into this. Because, you know, to me, I think it's ridiculous, like, you know, for any players, you know, moving forward, especially NBA players, because of our brotherhood, right? And you know you can get in touch with me anyway. But to jump into the space without giving me a call just makes no sense. You know what I'm saying? Because I know now, like, you know, what's going to make money, what's really the longevity in cannabis. What's amazing is that, you know, to be honest, like, you know, I've been having this conversation with y'all for a while, for years, right? And every time I've talked to y'all about it, you know, it seems like I'm an expert, right? But what I know now compared to what I knew then,
yeah, right.
I didn't know shit. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? But now I'm like 10 years in. One of the challenges we're going to have is going to be capital, right? And, you know, that's why, you know, I try to reach out to many players and entertainers and, you know, people that look like me and that share the same interest in cannabis, because we all smoke it. We all love it. We enjoy it. It's part of our lifestyle. And trying to get them to, let's partner up and do this together, because, you know, I feel like, you know, just in sports, you know what I'm saying, like Instagram, all these things are built off of us, right? And we don't get paid for it, right? So imagine if all the athletes from all sports decided, like, we're going to start our own Instagram.
Kill it.
It would kill Instagram.
Right.
It would be bigger than Instagram. You know what I'm saying? But it's something in our DNA. I don't know if it's the competitive gene or something that doesn't allow us to come together. Yeah. It's just something, and I guess it's from the 400 years of, you know, what has been ingrained in us that probably is what the cycle that we can't break at this time. But to your point, like what you said, like, this is generational wealth at risk. Like, these little $100 million contracts and shit like that, in the grand scheme of things of the world and real wealth, that's nothing. Mm-hmm. It's people that spend $100 million in a day sometime. You understand? They can do that. You know what I'm saying? So it puts things in perspective. And, you know, my whole thing is just like, you know, when, you know, one of our new monikers is, what is your purpose? My purpose now is, obviously, you know, number one is to take care of my family. And obviously, I have to do that first, right? The second thing is literally trying to figure out a way to empower and impact other people's lives. You know what I'm saying? I tell people all the time, I had the best time of my lives already. I've done the boats, I've done the private planes, I've done the crazy trips, I've had the craziest dinners and all that. You know what I'm saying? What's next? What else can you do? That's what I'm trying to instill in my company's culture through everybody throughout it. We're gonna build a brand, we're gonna scale a brand with purpose, and we're gonna do it with excellence. You know what I'm saying? And that's how we're going to rock. And while we do that, we are going to help a lot of people. You know what I'm saying? The goal of mine is to create 100 millionaires in the next 3 years. We have another company that we go after licenses or whatever. And, you know, we just won two states. One state's announced, the other state's not announced. That's why I can't announce it. But between those three opportunities, those two licenses that we just won, I just made 8 of my homeboys millionaires.
That's dope. Right?
Dudes that came from nothing, had nothing. You know what I'm saying? And I was able to, you know, provide an opportunity that will allow them to, you know, become millionaires, bro. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that's what I'm trying to do with Viola. You know what I'm saying? And I hope and pray that one day I could get the support of my other brothers that's like me so that we can really go out here and really impact the world. Like, people die for shit like this, what we trying to do. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, for real. You know what I'm saying? When you try to uplift a whole, you know, generation of people, you yeah. know what I'm saying? And, you know, what we need to realize is, like, you know, I'm not racist by any means, but I'm woke. Mm-hmm. We live in the NBA and all that type of shit. We live in a different world, not the real world.
Right.
But I've allowed myself to be vulnerable and be accessible to the real world. You know what I'm saying? And our generation, our race, excuse me, not our generation, but our race is last, bro.
No question.
You know what I'm saying? Like, everything has more rights than black people when you really think about it.
Right.
I feel like the only way that we can change this cycle is we're gonna have to do it through, you know, economic growth and coming together, you know what I'm saying, and creating our own shit that's mm-hmm. ours, that can nobody take from us. And I have so many ideas. If us as black athletes came together and we can do stuff that, you know, we talk about creating an environment where our families never have to work again, we can do it. We just gotta do it together. Put our egos aside. Yeah. We all get 1%. We all get 0.5% of something that's gonna be worth trillions of dollars. You understand what I'm saying? Now, that's how we make sure our family never, ever struggle again. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's what Viola's about, bro. We're just getting started, you know, and, you know, I feel like, you know, 5-10 years from now, you know, I think, number one, my 100 millionaire, 100 millionaires goal will be accomplished. And then after that, I could turn it to thousands. We're trying to change the narrative, man. It's our time, man. It's been too long. We're too talented. You know, it's too many industries before us that we pioneered that we don't have no ownership in. And I think that obviously because of those times, I don't feel like we had the proper resources to be able to take advantage of the opportunity. But this fucking time, if we don't and we end up customers again, we fucking played ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's it, period.
I like it. So you're big on the evolution of, I mean, like you said, it's been going on for a long time, but really kind of bringing it to the forefront. I take pride in this as well as kind of being the shield for guys that are playing right now.
Right.
We can talk about it, we can educate, we can continue to spread our arms and empower people, but athletes are still stuck. We're still punished for it. Guys are losing their career, they're losing money, painted as a bad person because of this.
Right.
You know, so talk about a little bit about how you feel cannabis and professional sports go hand in hand.
Yeah, so, you know, when I first started in the league, you know, I was one of the guys that when guys was smoking.
He was a square.
I was a square. I was like, what they doing? You know what I'm saying? They not really doing nothing to help our cause of being winners and all that. So
That's what I used to do to people like you.
I know. Y'all used to always
help my cause. Never not help my cause.
But I ain't know, bro. I ain't know. You know, I grew up in that era where I was afraid. I was one taught that if I smoked weed, I was going to be a crackhead. Like, who want to be a crackhead? I used to see crackheads in the corner shaking and, you know, no clothes on. Like, who wants that? So I'm not going to smoke no weed to end up like that. You can forget
about
it.
Don't ever compare the flower to that.
But that's where I was from. That's how I was.
Oh,
then I seen people getting locked up for it all the time. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, the other thing, I definitely, Al Harrington does not want to go to jail. So cannabis just wasn't on my radar. So, you know, obviously, once I had my experience, and it took for me to have my experience, because I seen y'all smoke, and I seen y'all still be successful, right? But I still, at that time, felt like it wasn't for me. But once I got introduced to it, and then once I educated myself on the medicinal benefits of it, it made me just go back and think about my career and what I put my body through. Mm. And, you know, I was hurt a lot of the time. I played all the time. Yeah. I played hurt. I didn't miss a lot of games. I was, you know, I always had knees, something bothering my knee, my back, whatever. And you know what the trainers did? They just gave me anti-inflammatories.
Anything.
They gave me muscle relaxers. You know, if it was really bad, they'd give me, you know, the good stuff, the oxys and the whatever, right? Just whatever it took for me to be comfortable enough for being,
back,
you know,
on the court.
To get out there on the court and play. Once I educated myself, I realized all the side effects and all these different things, because I took anti-inflammatories for 7.5 straight years, bro. 2 in the morning, 1 at night. And I needed that just to be able to get up and feel good enough to go out and work on my craft the way I felt like I needed to. And, you know, when you think about all the side effects, like I said, potentially, and, you know, I'm still living, right? So the effects may be coming. It don't have to happen right now. I may feel those effects when I turn 50 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But could you imagine if I was educated enough to know and I had accessible cannabis? You know what I'm saying? Where I could take a tincture under my tongue, or I could use a topical and rub it on my areas where I'm in pain. And, you know, when I realized that, and, you know, talking to other athletes, and, you know, once I started becoming more of an advocate, more athletes coming to me like, yo, we love what you're doing. This is ridiculous. We should be able to have access. That's when I started to speak on it. And it inspired me to, you know, start a line of products that, you know, professional athletes could have access to that had, you know, 0% THC, which is obviously the main concern with sports leagues, is that one property or that one cannabinoid in the plant is THC is what's really banned. So, you know, I started my company Harrington Wellness, and, you know, my first line that I launched is Replay. You know, so it's a Replay hemp extract product that, you know, I use for recovery, you know. And, you know, one of the reasons why when I got done playing or inspired me to push me out the league was my knee. Like, I could not get swelling out of my knee. And because of the swelling, it always, you know, I was always in pain.
That's the same that you went across seas and had that surgery for?
I went to Germany and had a procedure. I had every single procedure you could have here in the United States trying to figure out my knee. And not until I finished my formulation of Replay and was able to use it and use it consistently that all the inflammation is out of my knee. And that's the only reason why I was able to play in the Big Three, was because of this cream that I had made. and because nothing else was working. Now that, you know, I had these products and, you know, it's not only my company, there's other companies that are doing, you know, that have products and stuff like that. But, you know, I feel like CBD is going to be the gateway into professional sports. And I think that people need to wrap their head around that all cannabis isn't bad. And even the THC side is not bad. You know what I'm saying? There's just still that stigma on it,
right,
that we are every day changing. And, you know, one of the things that I prided myself on and, you know, having people like, you know, Stack being, you know, very supportive. When we played in the Big Three, you know what I'm saying, we let everybody know about our cannabis mm-hmm. use. Because to me, once again, it was changing the stigma because me and him was the best two players in the league, right? We both had all these other things going on. He's doing TV. I'm running my company. And we use cannabis every day. And look at the success. Look right. at the wins that we're having while we're using it. And I thought that was very important that we did that. And to let people know, like, look, man, like, I'm a father of four. You know, I manage a business. I manage a household. I manage all my other investments. I manage family. Mm-hmm. I still hoop. And I smoke weed every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not true that when you smoke, you're going to be stuck on the couch. And especially when you have access to CBD. CBD is not going to do nothing but actually heal. I think that, you know, obviously with baseball made the huge announcement that they're no longer testing in the minor leagues. They never test in the big leagues anyway.
Right.
But making that announcement now says that pretty much cannabis is legal.
And I'm surprised that they did it first.
You know what?
I'm
not because they was never testing for it. But what's really unique about it is that there was no backlash.
Zero.
Like none.
Zero.
It was on SportsCenter one day. They might have touched on it the next day because they was having those meetings, and that was it.
Why do you think that is?
I think because no one care. The fans do not care if players have access to cannabis. I don't think they care anymore.
Because it doesn't affect the game.
It does not affect what they do. And you got to remember, we're professionals, right?
Right. So the responsibility comes with it.
We can drink.
I don't want you coming to the game. Hi, I don't want you.
We can drink. So why not?
That's the same responsibility you need to
drink. As much as we like to drink, and players like to drink. So you like to drink, you like to smoke, right? You don't show up to the games drunk.
It's a responsibility.
How many teammates? I've had one teammate that showed up to a game drunk, but he was not playing.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the back.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He was sitting on the bench. He wasn't playing. I'm just not about to go and lace him up against Steven Jackson or Matt Barnes and going to go get high before I do that.
I can't do
or
it.
Or play KD. Or I'm not blowing like, oh, I'm about to go. Like, no.
You know responsibilities what I'm come with it.
Right, bro. But what I'm saying is, like, we're professionals. You know what I'm saying? And I think that fan bases understand that, too. And you may have one or two guys. You know what I'm saying? Every sport has that one guy that has, mm-hmm. you know, problems beyond, you know, what
deep
we can actually
that,
speak for,
rep,
speak
right.
on. You know
right.
what I'm saying? And those are the guys that, you'll have one bad apple, but, you know, if you allow players to use cannabis, man, I just think it makes it for a better league. You know, I think, you know, what players put themselves through to get themselves ready to play the game, go through all the emotions of the game, within the game, after the game, and what we do is we run the liquor. We tell the ball boy, go get me a bottle of Ciroc, go get me a bottle of Douce. And, you know, we sitting there, we drinking. And now we drink to the point where, you know, if we're going to the next city or whatever, like, you know, you're dehydrated for real.
Dehydrated as fuck.
You off your game, obviously. And just imagine if, and I know players would do this, because we all looking for an advantage, right, of feeling better. You know what I'm saying? Like, one thing I laugh about all the time is, like, me and Wilson Chandler are two players that I know that have tried every and any kind of workout, medicine, supplement that will make you feel better. I have not found anything as good as cannabis. So, like I said, just imagine after a game, a trainer walks around with a gummy bear, you know what I'm saying, with an edible that's, you know, 100 milligrams CBD and 5% THC and gives that to a player. And he takes that and allows him to start to relax.
Help
and
you
as
sleep.
We know, right, and as we know, you know, the cannabinoid, you know, it is a natural anti-inflammatory. And it, like you said, it helps you sleep. So it's just so much good that comes from it. So I think that NHL is going to be next. Mm. I think NFL's definitely after that because they got their collective bargaining, so they may end up being before NHL, but I wouldn't be surprised if NHL did it this season, just from some people I know. And then the NBA's going to have to do it. And they're open to it. You know, Adam understands that. And, you know, I think that if any player ever decided to take that step as far as with saying it's his right to use cannabis, especially the players that play in cities or states that it's legal, because with the state that you live in says that it's medicinally legal for you to have access to it if a doctor prescribes you for it. So how can the league tell you that you can't get the medicine that your doctor recommended?
It would be a hell of a court battle, and they don't want that.
And they don't want that.
They don't want that.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it could be forced if it had to be, but I think that, you know, the Players Association, you know, they're very open to it. You know, obviously, I talk to Michelle Roberts and Chris Paul and them guys all the time. They're on board. You know, they're supportive of what we're doing. And, you know, now they're just waiting for just, you know, small things, you know, like some form of a stamp of approval or a stamp that can say that these products are THC-free, and but outside of the cannabis space.
Right,
so they're looking
right.
for it from somewhere, FDA, uh-huh. someone like FDA certified or different things like that. And those are the things that I'm working on, you know what I'm saying, trying to figure that out. But, you know, we're very close, and, you know, I think that all of our work is about to come to a head.
Right.
Like, I think the players are about to have access.
I feel it, too.
It's going to be because of us.
And I really, like I said before when we started this conversation, I mean, we've all kind of done it, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't try to keep it a secret, but, you know, I smoked. So I came out right out the gates, you know what I mean? Post-career, we did that Bleacher Report shit
right.
and kind of started running with it, you know what I mean? So it was really my goal. I kind of felt like it was my responsibility because I got popped towards the end of my career. I was getting drug tested. When I played for Memphis, I was getting drug tested once a week and still smoking. I made it work. But to me, there's no other alternative. Like you said, I'm someone who, I take a pill, my stomach hurts. You know what I mean? I'm not really a drinker, I'm a social drinker. I'm not a sit back and just drink my sorrows away. So I've just always smoked and I just knew what it did for me, you know? So the fact that there's now medical research backing that up,
right.
you know what I mean? And because we can talk about-
You're not crazy after all.
No, we can talk about our stories till we're blue in the face, but until we started getting these research behind us, when people start listening, you know what I mean? So I just think, our experiences, like you said, if the top of the line, you know, the 1%, NBA, you know, professional athletes are 1%ers. If we can be functional and professional athletes and fathers and business owners and doing all this productive shit, like, there has to be something to it.
Right.
You know, like I said, I got popped, and he said there's probably over 200 dudes in the drug program for weed alone, and there's, what, 400 players in the NBA?
And like I always say, like, I think it's 90% of us use cannabis in some shape, form, or fashion. And obviously 1,000% in the offseason.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I could see like a Steph Curry, you know what I'm saying? Like, with his wife on vacation, like, let's take this edible.
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with that?
Nothing. You shouldn't be penalized for that.
There's nothing wrong
with
that.
But imagine if someone like a LeBron or a KD or someone like that and came out and said, I medicate to help me. I mean, LeBron spent at one point, it would probably take off that $1.5 million a year LeBron is paying for his body if he would, you know what I mean, if he was.
Right.
You know what I mean? But imagine that, but it would take someone like that.
KD right. did take a big step, though, because he invested in that cannabis company in Canada.
Yeah, I seen that.
Yeah, KD did?
I think he has two cannabis investments.
That's
obviously,
a big step.
Yeah, there's players that are, you know, that are definitely investing in stuff, but, you know, to our point, like, you know, they're using more, and it's more in the open than it was when we was.
Right.
When we was doing it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we never sat in a club and smoked weed.
Who?
We did every...
No, y'all didn't smoke, like, in the club in front of everybody. Like,
what?
No, we...
Who did?
Who did not?
You
did. Where were you?
They was not. That's cat.
We gotta call somebody right now.
Y'all gotta call somebody right now.
Call every teammate.
Call
every
Baron.
Teammate.
Call Baron.
Man, my y'all, God. Was not
gonna call Baron.
Y'all was not you standing on the edge
that's
of the
all
stage.
Where is Jack? Where is this cat?
I'm appalled.
My God.
They've been out the game too long.
Oh, my goodness.
Are you kidding me?
They've been out the game too long. They was not up front.
We were sitting in our area.
You don't remember New
Year's? He used to be standing up, smoking with his shirt off.
That was one. New Year's was one time.
Oh, who we got on the phone?
Hey, shut up. BD.
Tell him we filming right now. We filming.
Hey, we filming right now, dude.
We had to ask you something.
Hey, but I got a serious question for you, dog.
Tell him what Al said first.
Al said, I don't know where he was at the time.
Unbelievable.
But Al said, we didn't smoke in the club when we was in Golden State.
Are we live?
He said, are we live? We rolling. It don't matter. We rolling. It don't matter. We smoking right now.
Al said we didn't.
Al didn't. He said, Al didn't.
Al didn't.
All right, I'm rolling. I'm not about to argue with them. Y'all got
Al didn't, but you got to think, just like you said, you didn't smoke till the second year. We had tore every club up by then.
Tore down.
What do you mean?
It was a regular. We
tipped. I was there.
We tipped each bouncer $100. We was good. So anyway.
My bad.
It's okay.
Yeah, where were you?
We forgive you.
Where were you?
But anyway, like I said,
not like now. I just don't feel like these motherfuckers is sitting in the middle of the spot.
Because of what we did.
Right.
We started that shit.
Right, my bad. Yeah, these guys are using, so, you know, I think that the numbers is like staggering of like how many players actually use cannabis now. So, you know, it's time for a change. And it's coming. It's going to happen sooner than later. I think it's going to happen even sooner than I thought. Because I think when we did our Bleacher Report thing, I think we said 3 to 5 years or whatever. And that was a year ago. So
we might be right on. 2 years ago.
So we might be right on
time. Coming up on the third year.
Yeah, I think next year it's going to be some movement.
I think so. But talk about, you know, rest in peace, the conversation you had with Stern, kind of the entryway. You know what I mean? Because he was someone that was, Stern was, his reputation speaking, he was mafia. You know what I mean? And to sit down with him after he had handed the reins off to Adam in the open, real conversation you guys had, that made real headwaves.
Yeah, man, it was obviously, you know, it wasn't in the game plan, right? You know what I'm saying? I never was in my mind thinking, like, I got to eventually talk to David Stern about this. Happened organically, you know what I'm saying? I was at this Milken conference here in L.A. He was on a panel. You know, I went to go see him speak. And afterwards, you know, walked up to me and the first thing he said was, how's your knee? And I was just like, it's crazy, his memory,
oh,
right?
Man.
You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I'm Al Harrington and whatever. And all these players, like, for you to remember that was crazy. But he's like, how's your knee doing? I was like, it's all right, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I started telling him, you know, what I was, he's like, what are you doing here? So I was just like, I'm just trying to learn. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing, do next. But I was like, right now I'm in the cannabis space. And, you know, and then he was just like, yeah, I live in Aspen and there's all kind of dispensaries everywhere. You know, I drive past them all the time. And I was like, yeah, that's what I'm doing now. And I was just like, you know, also I want to figure out a way, you know, for players to have access to cannabis like that. And he's like, oh, no, hell no, blah, 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 whatever, whatever. And I was just like, no, I'm telling you, you got to look at it. I said, you should look at it. It's more information out there now. You should let me come talk to you about it. And he was like, fine. So it took me like 8 months to get on the schedule. Like literally like 8 months, bro. So 8 months later, I'm in New York. He tells me to come by. And you know, he's so busy or whatever. He gave me like a 20-minute time slot. I had 20 minutes to meet with him. And I get there and, you know, we start talking. And, you know, my grandmother's story breaks the ice for everybody. It like humanizes the plant,
right?
You know, I feel like, you know what I'm saying? So at least where people are willing to be open-minded enough to have a conversation at that point. And when I told him that, you know, he was just like, wow. And, you know, he's like, that's an emotional story. And then I just started telling him about the players. I was just like, you know, and I started with the whole responsibility thing. I was just like, you know, players aren't going to come high. And then, you know, he mentioned, like, back when he first took over, like, that was a real, they was on cocaine.
Cocaine, that was that powder. That wasn't that tree. That was that powder.
So he was just like, you'll be amazed. The guys will come, you know, to the game high.
I was talking to Jerry West the other day about some shit like that when he was coaching. He was telling me some shit. I'm like, what? Like, as the coach. And he knew. I was just like, damn.
Right. It was words. So he's telling me. So we talking. So then I walked him through the day of a player. For the most part, it was like my first, you know, and I just like, yo, you know, I said, you probably know this, but I said, you know, we wake up, we shower, we blast music, get ourselves riled up, get to the stadium, you know, go through film, get riled up, play, go through the emotions of the game, and you know how it is with officials and the coaches and the fans. And I was like, you know, we really train our bodies. Like, we train our bodies for real to play for 4 hours, right? We play 20 minutes, 30, you know what I'm saying? So after the game, we still on one. We need something. Like, we need something to bring us down. The thing that we reach for is the most unhealthy thing ever.
Alcohol.
Then we have injuries and shit like that. And the first thing we reach for is the opioids. And that's the worst shit ever. So, you know, I explained that to him and the flights and this. And I said, but I imagine we get an edible. We get a tincture. Get to the point where we can ask for some specific strains that we know that will do whatever we need, you know what I'm saying, for recovery. He was just like, I never thought about it like that. That's a very, very interesting way to look at it. And, you know, he was like, you know, we should talk again. Went to New York again, and we chopped it up again. And this time I had more research, and I had, like, some paperwork that I gave him and stuff. And then that's when I asked him, I was like, you mind going on camera and let me interview you about this? And he was just like, let me read up some more about it or whatever. And then he called me back a week later. And he was like, I'll do an interview with you, no problem. So we did the interview. And, you know, because he's an attorney, you know he's not going to say anything he don't want to say or he don't mean.
Mm-hmm.
So here I go, me and the producers or whatever, trying to craft questions to get him to say, like, players have access to cannabis, but in a roundabout way. I had a list of 17 questions, and it's impressive, Matt, you asked me all these questions without having some. But I'm looking, I'm like, and I go through first question, second question, third question, and literally he says this shit. He, like, said it, bro. He, like, yo, a player should have access to cannabis, and, you know, they should really look at this policy. It doesn't make any sense anymore. You know, it's now documented, you know, information that says that, you know, it's beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the producer, like, what else y'all want me to
That's
do?
A wrap.
That's all I came for. Like you said, it came out, and, you know, the impact that it had, you know what I'm saying? Obviously, I think it definitely, you know, was a hit amongst, you know, the brotherhood and the players and all that, obviously. But I think, you know, with the commissions of these leagues and stuff like that, they had to take a look. I was speaking for all of us, you know what I'm saying? Every sport, you know what I'm saying? And he was speaking for all the sports. And I think that, you know, someone especially like him, because, you know, he was a tyrant, you know, like, he didn't play, you know, it was his way or the highway, you know what I mean? And for him to say that, I think, because everyone knows how he is, they had to look at it. I think that that's why that, you know, that video was so impactful. And it's crazy, too, because, you know, I've been meaning, every time I go to New York, I've been meaning to hit him up. And then next thing you know, he dropped dead, you know, for the most part. So, you know, it sucks, you know. A lot of people, after I did the interview, they just knew that he was, like, an investor. Like, everybody, that was the first question. He's an investor, right? I'm like, no. But, you know, one of the things I was going to ask him was actually, like, to be on the board of my company.
That would have been dope.
Because that would have been amazing just to have his insight
right.
of building
Business.
Brands and changing, mm-hmm. you know, the way people, because, you know, people perceive the NBA a yeah. certain way. It's a drug yeah. league and this,
right.
that, and the
Too black, too drug, and he had a vision. We talked about this on The Jump a couple weeks ago with Rachel. You know what I mean? He had his vision of what he, his ideals and what he did in branding individual player. Like, he had this whole play. So I only imagine him sitting on your board would have yeah. guided you guys.
So that's what I mean with, the, you know, with do it with excellence, is yeah. having more access
Come
to
on,
people
man.
Like that around
know.
Us. That's how we're going to win, bro. We're going to win in this industry. I don't know how it's going to go, but we're going to win.
The message is going to get out on this. This is going to be one of our, you know what I mean? We've had some dope shows, but this yeah. one is so educational. Like I said, this is, you know how important this is to me. You yeah. know what I mean? And I know how important it is to you, and to just keep pushing the word. You know yeah. what I mean? And like you said, everybody can do shit individually and probably be successful, but together, we
Can't
would
move.
Be unstoppable.
We could own, like, we could, like, have real ownership. Talking about jobs, ancillary jobs.
So anybody, man, you see this, any athletes, pass it to your homeboys, you see it, hit me up, hit Al up, hit Jack up. Come together, come join our team, and let's take this shit over, man.
Let's do it.
Let's get on the NBA, bro.
Home stretch.
Yes, sir.
Get on the NBA. What you think about the NBA today? How you feel about it?
It's cool. I don't really like to watch it. You know what I'm saying? I just, you know, I'm not a fan of the 134 to 148 games.
At all. I ain't
you know what
either.
I'm saying? And I just feel like it should be more pride defensively. You know what I'm saying? Now, I know they changed the game to the point where you can't touch.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But I think that it just needs to be more
it's
pride
soft.
Defensively, man. And then the whole, like,
well, just sometimes it almost seems like they don't care as much because they don't play deep.
It's called buddy-buddy
right.
ball.
And that's just how the game is
I
played.
Score,
and that's not everybody.
That,
but that's just some people. Like,
that's
it, it's so easy out there that it's just like, damn, like, are you kidding me? Like,
and then the resting, and it's like, then you rest, you don't play the games. It's like, when we came up, the game was the show.
We took pride in playing 82 games
but
every year.
Game
but
the game was
that,
the show.
We love playing 4 games in 5 nights. That's less fucking practice. That's more games.
But that's back
wow,
when we really,
practice,
we have to really used to have to practice.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, we go to war. Like, I remember with Stan Van Gundy, we used to motherfucking have to have taped ankles and knee pads and shoot around, bro. Like, we got to it.
Yeah, I would remember that.
You know what I mean? We got to it. So
I'm cool.
It is funny, too, because, like, we're not even now. I'm 2 years removed. So when you talk like this, you're like, oh, you're a hater, you're this, you're that. It is not that at all. Just the game has completely changed. And
yeah.
to me, I don't have as much as a problem. Like, I respect the fact because it's continuing to evolve. This is
yeah.
Stern's plan,
right,
you
right.
know, a global game. So people want to see highlights. They want to see three-pointers, dunks, and high scores. They don't want to see a defensive battle.
Yep.
They don't want to see a Detroit, Indiana type. They mm-hmm. they do, but if there's no fight, like,
right.
who wants to see an 83-81 game?
Right, right.
You know what I mean? So the game has evolved. So I feel what you're saying. It's just like it just doesn't seem like,
That competition level.
It's just, and again, it's just, you know, it's just threes. You just run around, shoot threes. And I talked to an official yesterday that's in the space, and he said to me, he's like, you know, these guys, it's just so it's changed since you guys have been gone. He's like, all they do is shoot threes, and they drive to the hole, and they touch when they want a free throw. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, but the game is, but the skill level of the
skill
game
is
like
higher than it's
the
ever been.
Game that they got.
Incredible.
Oh, they cold. Incredible.
How would you be in today's game?
I think I'd be solid. You know, I could, you know, I could do all that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But it wouldn't have been no inside. I just had to do everything from the outside, which I'd have been cool with, because I had handle and then I could shoot. I think I would have been able to make this transition for sure. You know what I'm saying? I mean, when I came in the league, when we came in, it was inside out ball, Shaq, TV.
You had to touch the inside before you even shot a three.
But by the time we was on the end, it was like Yao, and like after Yao, it was like kind of done. You know what I'm saying? Now you look at, like, I went to go see Oklahoma City play the Pacers, and the big kid Turner, you know, he didn't touch the paint one time on the offensive end. Like, I was there the entire game on the floor, and he did not touch the paint on the offensive end one possession, bro.
Shooting three.
Not probably, crashing, not just, I'm like, what is going on? He's 7 foot, but he's skilled. He's
out there. They're running the offense through the centers
back,
a lot at the three-point line.
He's nice.
I'm just like, damn, but you're not going to touch the paint one time, big fella? You 7 feet? Right. You ain't going to get one offensive rebound, dog?
Or one mismatch, one switch?
Nothing. But that's how the game is played. But, you know, like I said, you know, it's not what I like to watch for now. Maybe when my kids get into it, I can get back into it.
So it's not no players you like to watch?
Oh yeah, of course I like watching play. I like, you know, I like KD, obviously. You know, Bron is, you know, my GOAT.
Is he? Oh, let's talk about that. So you got, give me your top three.
Bron, Mike, probably like Shaq.
All them buckets Kobe gave you, and you just not gonna disrespect him?
I'm not disrespecting him. I'm just saying, you asked me who my top.
I'm just saying, who gave you more buckets than Kobe? Out of all of them?
Kobe 4.
But I'm saying, who gave you more buckets at all than with Kobe in it? Kobe, right?
Gave me buckets?
All of us together.
Shit, I didn't get a lot of Kobe buckets.
Man, stop it.
Kobe was cold. I mean, Kobe was the guy. But you asking, Bron is the best player because I feel like, just because you talk about the best basketball player, not the best killer instinct, you understand what I'm saying? The fact that he can play all five positions, the fact that he's done this shit for 17 years consistently, no drop off at any time, and we've been saying, well, not we,
you can
the
decide,
media.
You big teething right now, like you really feeling this.
But I'm saying,
he's the best all around player of all time. He's not far.
Oh yeah, there's no question.
All right, there we go.
I'll give him that.
Yeah.
But if you ask me, do I got to start? I got to start an organization, and I need a bad motherfucker.
Him.
No, I'm going with Mike.
Okay.
Really.
I'm going with Mike.
Yeah.
Going with Mike, but outside of that, it's him, dog. Hands down. Over Magic, Bird, all of them.
Yeah.
My
I'm not mad at that. I'm not mad at that.
The battle for LA. Who gonna win it? Clippers? Lakers?
See, the only thing with the Clippers that scared me is because they keep doing all these dudes not playing and all that kind of
they're
stuff.
They're resting. That shit
they ain't used to.
But you know, it's something to be said about. You know, you gotta build.
I respect it. I'm not mad at it because
no,
like,
but I'm saying, you gotta build that camaraderie and that feel for each other. They like they not like that to me. Like, you know, PG is still like evolving, right? You know, it's not like he had like a killer playoff series before. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like he just proven where you like, you know, in the playoffs, he about to just turn it up like to the
he
max.
He got that proven contract. That's what he got.
But no, he got game. But I'm not saying you don't have game or none of that. I'm just saying it's not like you know PG to be like when the playoffs come, he take his shit from here to here. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. So all I'm saying is like, I feel like, you know, and Kawhi was able to do that last year.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And like, that's rare. Like, there's not a lot of players that can go in and out the lineup and all that, get in that, and go here.
That's Kawhi's second time.
Right, okay, so he's done it twice. So my point being is, like, he's known for that now, right?
Right.
PG's not known for that, you know what I'm saying? And nobody else on their team. So all I'm saying is, like, I would like to see them play more games together and start,
getting
like,
chemistry.
Take the season serious. They taking it like,
they
don't matter
all-star.
What seed they get.
They take the Lakers game serious, that's about
they
it.
They take that, but that's what I'm saying. So my whole thing is, like, I don't know how that's going to end up. I will say that I feel like the Lakers are taking every game serious. So because of that, that might play into it if they don't, you know, if they don't start playing consistently
together. The Lakers take every game
serious
except the Clippers. They had me doing 50 push-ups.
Yeah, so that was classic.
So I'm saying,
but
like,
question, real quick, with the injuries you had throughout your career, if load management was a thing, you think that would have put some years on your career? If you really just sat, because like I said, I tell people, because we interviewed DeMarcus too, I said we have to be protected from ourselves. Like at the end of the day, we want to get out there.
Right.
But if they have this research now backing it up, that if you rest here, there, and I feel both sides. Like fans want to come see you play, but at the end of the day, if it's about winning championships, is what we make everything about. Why would you not want your players to be the absolute most rested they could be, knowing the fucking wear and tear our bodies take? You know, we both all know how firsthand our bodies take. So if we're strategically rest throughout the season and start revving up at the right time, to me, post-playoffs is the right time to start getting on. That's how fast we
came
together.
Yeah, I understand that.
And it's more of just a...
But I don't respect it, though.
You're pure hooper.
I just don't respect it because I think that the reason why it's an 82-game season and all that is because it's the journey.
That's the part of the grind.
It's the journey.
Yes.
So it's like, I want to be tired in the end.
I want you to be tired.
Exactly. I want to go from tired.
I want to push myself
get more out of tired.
But why I say it's different with that, too, is because these kids now are playing more games before they get to where we're at. You played a lot of games because you came straight from high school. Excuse me. But the AAU system now, these kids are playing so much games. Their bodies are so worn down by the time they get to where the 1% get. That their knees, when they're coming in at 18, their knees are 26, 27-year-old knees.
Well, manage it down there. Don't manage it when I'm paying you millions of dollars.
I respect that, and when I'm coming out
to watch you play.
Maybe that's a real talk then. Manage that AAU shit.
Manage AAU.
Because at the end of the day, it's the journey.
It's the grind.
I feel what you're saying. But to me, like having kids in the game, I understand it now. You know what I mean? Right. So I'm looking at it as like this next generation, like... If it's strategically done, it's the right thing to do. Like, I have no problem. And we talked to Lou Will, because Lou Will said, Kawhi's hurt. It's not so much load management.
Yeah, like, I figured he's a hooper. He liked the hoop.
Yeah, he want to play.
From what I know about him, you know what I'm saying? He loved the hoop. So I figured that. They didn't want the media, like, his knees messed up, his back. So I figured something was bothering him. So I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm talking about even guys on teams that is not playing for a championship and doing load management.
Yeah, I feel
that. Telling him... Or a guy that's in his second year still developing, we're not going to play you the rest of the year.
Yeah, fuck that. What is going on, bro? I hear that.
But to go back and touch on what y'all said, what's coming out now is it's not even AAU. It's the middle school basketball. Because they're not even learning nothing. So it's making them worse. And they playing that middle school basketball the whole school year, getting hurt. And in that time, AAU was fine because they traveling, they learning a lot. Middle school, they're not learning nothing. So that's wasting the time.
Well, that's why a lot of them getting hurt in middle school. Middle school ball is for nothing now.
It don't even make no sense to play. You got to work it out.
Like, that's why I'm coaching my kids. Like, I'm not letting them get wrapped up. And even if basketball's not what they do, if it is what they do, but just it's such a dirty grind. But I like what you said, like, manage the AAU
shit. Just don't
teach
your sons how to dribble like you. To shoot, run, jump, but dribbling, do not teach them dribbling.
Just make sure you don't teach your son how to fall on his face and bust his motherfucking face open and get a whole new grill and flatten his nose out.
But you're anyway, so petty, boy. You're a petty motherfucker.
you know, you throw one, I'm going to throw eight at you.
Make sure you tell your son not to fall on his face and bust his flatten his nose.
We all got new pearlies over here.
Not me, my shit real.
I'm talking about him.
I can tell.
All right. Oh, okay.
I can tell your shit real.
Yeah, no,
she's never natural, mother.
I know. That'd be pretty story.
Fucking turtle out of shit. Anyway, man, who's your... Let's get back to...
Gobble, gobble.
Let's get back to this shit. Who you got in the finals?
One of the LA teams.
So the Battle of LA is going to be your finals winner. Whoever wins that is going to win the finals.
It shouldn't be that hard.
No, out of the East?
No, I'm just...
Period. Finals picks.
Yeah, it's one of the teams out of LA. That's fair?
Yeah.
And I'm going to go with... Milwaukee. It should be Milwaukee, but I just feel like Sun could get shut down.
Boston.
Just Boston, just because I think the Kimba factor should step in. I just feel like with Philly, there's some leadership issues there, and like somebody got to take charge, and they haven't been able to figure that out. And then obviously they playing well too,
Miami.
But I just don't know enough players on their team.
I think they one player away.
Yeah, I just don't know anybody on the team but him. But they a good team. But yeah, I would say Boston and one of the LA teams. So the rivalry back. That's another vision they had, right? They want those two teams to be.
We're going
to
smoke to that then.
Yes, sir.
At Viola.
Let's do it.
Finals party.
So you got the Lakers, Boston.
Lakers, Boston, party at Viola.
Party at Viola.
Who winning?
Lakers.
Goddamn right. He got the Clippers winning.
I got the Clippers winning, but I mean, if it's Lakers in Boston, to me, whoever wins the battle, LA is going to win the finals. That's no disrespect to the rest of the league. That's just what it is. Last question. Five people you could sit, smoke, and just be creative as fuck with.
In my life right
now?
Dead
or alive. Who's at your table? Not counting me and Jack. Give some other people some space.
All right, so I gotta have BD there. Just like to, you know.
For everything. You ain't gotta explain to us.
MC the whole thing. Make sure it all makes sense. I wanna smoke with Obama.
Yeah.
I wanna smoke with, like, Legends in the Game. I want Bob there. Just to hit the herb with him.
Young Marley.
Damn, who else would I want to smoke with? You know, I'm on some history shit, so, like, you know, just be able to learn and be like, so Marcus Garvey, I'd love to smoke with him.
Yeah,
dope.
That's what we was waiting for you to go, that type of shit.
And then I'll probably just have another, like, entertainer. Who would I want to smoke with? I don't know, somebody like Lenny Kravitz. Not Lenny Kravitz, Jimi Hendrix.
When you said somebody funny, it was funny because D-Wade had Eddie Murphy at his.
Oh, Eddie, BD.
Yeah, he had somebody. He had Obama, too, at his, too.
BD, my Eddie Murphy, though.
Yeah. he all purpose.
That's everyone you mentioned. He had a little piece of everybody you mentioned.
And Jimmy, yeah.
He damn sure Obama.
Man, that's a wrap. All the Smoke.
All the Smoke.
Legendary episode, man. I think this episode is going to make a lot of headways.
My brother.
I hope it does. You know, we got to bring people together.
No doubt.
Athletes need to be able to smoke. We need to love each other.
Yes, sir.
We gonna smoke anyway.
Regardless.
Fuck you, man.
But man, hell of a show.
Did it
thank
again.
You for having me. Man, hold on. Let me wipe
his hands all sweaty.
Bro, what's going on with that?
Look at me.
Slap him. Moist. He don't want to feel it. Moist. He don't want to feel it.
My hands are not moist.
It's just moist.
My hands are not moist.
Yeah, they are. Like how you been like, arguing with two of us?
Feel like you just lotioned them or something.
Like you been playing with your dick over here.
So what's up?
Motherfucker got a hole through his sweatshirt in here.
Hey, you want my shit to be chafed like your shit, nigga? You got calluses and shit like you been curling
no,
on the show,
don't do me like that. My shit is nice. I get manied and petted. Your shit's nice and wet, bro.
And my shit manied.
I thought you was playing with yourself down there. That's crazy. On camera, too, bro?
You a sicko. Sicko mode.
This nigga's the biggest hater ever, dog.
Man, catch us Thursday.
Ever,
all the smoke.
The biggest hater ever.
With our guy, Al Harrington.
I'm too fresh to be stale. These niggas hate me, man. What they talking about?
That's a wrap, man. All the Smoke. Great episode with my brother, Al.
Right.
Check this out on Showtime Basketball YouTube or all platform streaming podcasts.
All of them.
Everything she does.
Back off!
Is because she never loses sight of what's important. Put you on a military transport tonight.
Hell yes.
No one's backing down on either side. We have a bona fide crisis.
We'll follow it up together. Get to the truth.
I did what had to be done.